USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
It could be another sign that the economy is slowing. The ADP private payrolls jobs report has been released this morning, and it shows the U.S. economy adding around 135,000 jobs last month. That's down from August's revised total of 157,000. And the September gain was the slowest since June. It drops the monthly average for the year to 145,000 jobs a month, well below last year's monthly job creation average of 214,000. The government's jobs report is due for release on Friday. For the first time, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has acknowledged that he was listening in on President Trump's controversial phone call with the President of Ukraine in July, the revelation made during a news conference beside the Italian foreign minister in Rome this morning. This is USA Radio News.
I'm at the American Veterinary Medical Association annual convention in Washington, D.C. with Dr. Barbara Natterson Horowitz, evolutionary biologist and physician.
There's a form of fainting that happens when people get stressed because the excitement triggers a slowing of the heart. Why this happened didn't make sense. The heart shouldn't slow down. The heart should speed up when there's fear. But what I've learned by working with veterinarians and learning about how animal hearts work is that young animals, when they are scared, sometimes their heart rates get very, very low, and that causes them to be very still. And when wild animals become very still, it often makes them safer from predators. One possible hypothesis is that slowing of the heart rate in response to fear in our species is actually an evolutionary echo from our vertebrate ancestors, for whom the slowing of the heart was life-saving.
There's more valuable information at avma.org.
President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, hiring his own lawyer to deal with his role in the impeachment inquiry launched by Democrats. The former New York City mayor hiring Florida lawyer John Sale to represent him. Sale was an assistant prosecutor on the legal team investigating Watergate. Meanwhile, last night, Giuliani said anything he did with regard to Ukraine was on behalf of Donald Trump and not the U.S. government.
Were you representing the president personally?
Representing the president personally against charges that he colluded, against charges that he's going to be impeached.
That is heard on Fox News. The sentencing phase continuing today after former Dallas cop Amber Geiger was convicted of murder yesterday for shooting her neighbor last year. She claims she thought it was her apartment and he was an intruder. Geiger could face life in prison. Just getting word the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down over 400 points in morning trading on Wall Street. The other indexes also plummeting. And this is USA Radio.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you...
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Larry McEntee, and you're on the Hunterdon County radio station, and this is Home Again with Jeannie and Larry. I'm Larry. You'll catch Jeannie on the opposite weeks. So welcome aboard today. Bright and sunny today, and brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. You can reach me at 973-547-547. 7748. Home Team is an inspection service, a full inspection company doing radon tests and real estate investigations. Inspections. We do them for the sellers and the buyers, and we try to find out things, tell the story of your house. Some people like to say to me, does the house pass or does it fail? I don't pass or fail houses. I basically tell an unemotional, neutral view of the condition of the house, and then it's a value question. Really what kills deals is when the customer, when it crosses the line where the value of the house doesn't meet the what they're paying for it. So really the inspector's job is not to pass fail the house, but just to give you a great understanding of what condition the house is in and what has to be done or what will need to be done in the future. And then you can make a value decision, and that's something you should make with your agent, your lawyer, and your family, and decide whether, you know, because a house that's in a perfect location, you might be willing to pay more for it. You may be able to put up with more problems with the house versus one that's not so desirable or, you know, if you're not pressed. So consider that. Basically, home inspections are things that we look at the house and we give you a statement of what condition the house is in, and the good and the bad, and we'll go from there. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on today. We're going to do going green. If you're like me, I don't know what that means because there's so many things out there that don't explain it. Going green isn't as simple as buying a green appliance because, as you'll find out, this thing's called green wash and other things. But we'll get to that in a little bit. The weather today. First we're going to run a commercial, then we're going to run the weather, and then I'll be right back. So stay with me, and we'll be there in a second.
Hey, Pat.
Did you know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, Handyman Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Hunterton Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Stephen Patrick. Home sweet home.
Let's look at the weather. The weather today is going to be, believe it or not, 90 degrees today, mostly sunny. But don't put the jackets away just yet because tomorrow it's going to be 60 degrees. We're going to see a 30-degree drop overnight, and we're going to get a little wet tomorrow with some showers. Friday is going to be sunny, but it's going to stay down around 65. So we're going to drop to 30 degrees tomorrow. We're going to stay there for a little while. Saturday and Sunday, partly cloudy with some sun on Saturday and some clouds on Sunday, but in the range of 60 to 70 degrees. So pleasant day, but don't put the jackets away because when the sun goes in, it'll be cool. Good football weather. Monday and Tuesday, we're looking at showers around 65 to 70. So it's going to be cool and wet. We need some rain because we're actually in some drought conditions. I know up north they're banning fire pits and open burns for now because the ground is so dry. And then we're going to, after the weekend, going into Monday, we're looking at the showers and then partly cloudy again, but staying around 60 degrees. So enjoy this 90-degree weather. I think it's gone, and it may be gone for good unless we get some other summer weather coming in and behind it. So I'll be right back, and we'll start with Going Green.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterton Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterton-chamber.org.
Okay, we're back. This is Larry with Home Team, and this is Home Again with Jeannie and Larry. But we're going to cover something today which means going green. And what does going green mean? We're going to cover the difference between a green product and a green wash product, green appliances, green systems, and some green construction. I know everybody thinks green means good, and like many people today, it's almost like depends on what perspective you're coming from and what information you have. It's like the news lately, I tell you, that you know, if you only get pieces of it, you only understand a piece of it, and you got to understand the whole portion of it. Going green is not quite what everybody thinks it is, and we'll talk about that. You know, when you're doing in home inspections, you know, the new generation, and rightfully so. I mean, we need to look at our environment, and whether you're a climate control guy or a climate change guy or not, it's still the proper thing to do what's right by our environment, whether the climate's changing because of us or not, or do we have some influence on it, or are we like a drop in the bucket? I don't know that yet, but I do know that it's more responsible and it's the right thing to do is to do what you can to help our environment. But does it make the decision when you're buying a house? Is that the first thing in your mind? Is are you considering, you know, how green the house is, or is that the last thing you consider? Are you willing to pay for it? That's the question. A lot of people say, "Oh, I want green," but then they see the price tag, and you know, not so much. you know, I'd love to have a Tesla. And they say, oh, that's great. But as we'll see, that some things are not as green as you think they are just because they appear that way. But at the same time, if a Tesla's great because it's not burning fossil fuel, I mean, I can't afford one right now. I mean, an $80,000 car is not an option. But would we benefit from everybody driving electric cars? That depends. I mean, what are we going to do with all the batteries or all the rare earth metals that we need to build the batteries that we have to, you know, maybe the technology is great that we're developing it because eventually we'll have better ways of developing it in more cost effective ways. And we have to move in that direction. But we'll do that. Going green or greenwash, what's the difference? I wish we could have questions and answers. I'd love to be able to ask people if they know the difference because up until I'm certified, by the way, to teach this course, and I teach it to real estate agents, and they get CEU credits to take the course, and it helps them understand what growing green actually means, and because everybody talks about it. I know when I was on the school board, we were building the middle school, and the architects was, you know, trying to get LEED certification, which is basically a green certification, and it has to do with how much energy per square foot, how much air leakage, recyclable air conditioning, you know, recyclable energy, reducing the carbon footprint of the building. And it's very difficult to get it, but there were many factors that went into it that you might not think so. Green affects the impact that we have on the environment. So when we go green, we can help the following. We use fewer natural resources, hopefully. It's less toxic, less pollution. And then we got to look at the disposal impact because sometimes we may make a green decision, but then when it's time to throw away the product, we create a nightmare. Nuclear energy is if you look at it like that, could be a green product. I mean, it's a great product. It's a great energy source, but there's environmental impacts. So, all the extra heat, where does it go? Does it go into our rivers and our streams and affect our wildlife? And then you have the nuclear waste. And while it may be small, it is surely effective, and it's surely a problem of where we're going to bury it. And where we keep it for the next 150,000 years. So going green, it just means having a less impact on the environment. It's not as easy as you think, though, because a product uses less energy to function. The product also uses a lot of energy to manufacture it. And also there may be energy or it may be toxic when you go to dispose of it. So is it green? If it uses less energy when you're using it, but it costs more to produce it, and then it's a problem when it's time to dispose of it, is that truly a green product? Some people may say, yes, it's a green product because it uses less energy, but then all the way around. So the product, to make a case for green designation, you have to look at the definition of the impact and the definition of the environment. That's greenwash. You got to look at the whole picture. You can't just look at, you know, a light bulb saying, oh, it saves 60 cents an hour compared to an incandescent light bulb. There are other factors that go into that. And I want you to consider that. I mean, this is an area where I didn't see it right away. You know, it may be arbitrary by selecting an arbitrary frame of reference. And I'll explain that because the best way to do that is enhancing your understanding of greenwash is let's talk about a fluorescent light bulb. Now, we've all seen them. They've compactly, you can't get an incandescent light bulb anymore. Just so you know, a compact fluorescent bulb or an LED bulb is the way you got to go now, and they use less energy. But is that a great benefit, and is it the same benefit to everybody? And it's not, because the frame of reference, if you look at just energy consumption, the savings is about 75%. A CFL light bulb, a fluorescent light bulb, will save 75% of the energy that a regular incandescent light bulb will do. So that in itself is a green product. You say, oh, that's great. I'm going to save 75%. It's going to cost me 75 cents less per dollar of running that light bulb. That's true, but you got to look at it the other way. Although the energy saved is related to heat produced. So if CFLs produce 75% less heat compared to incandescent bulbs, where does the heat go in an incandescent bulb? Well, of course, it goes into your house. Well, do you want that? Well, if you live in Florida, you probably don't want it. But if you live in New Jersey and you're there this week and it's 60 degrees, you may want that heat. So understand that depending on which hemisphere you're in or what climate you're in, the bulb will, the energy savings will be less or more depending on where you live. For instance, if you have 60-watt light bulbs in your house and they're running and producing heat and that heat is keeping the house at 72 degrees or helping to keep it there, your furnace runs less, so therefore you're saving energy. But now if you have CFLs and you're not getting that heat from the light bulb, that means your furnace has to run that much longer. Now, where's the balance? If the furnace has to run a minute longer per hour to keep the house at the temperature that you want versus burning the light bulb as a byproduct, maybe the green energy savings of that light bulb is not what you think, because now you're burning, you know, a half a gallon more fuel to keep the house warm because you're using light bulbs that don't produce any heat. Now, if you're in Florida and you run your air conditioner and the heat from the light bulb increases the temperature and you run your air conditioner more, it's a savings. So understand, there's an example where your perception that light bulb in Florida may be more cost effective and more green than it is in Maine. So, again, it's all from the point of view of the reference. In a cool climate, you know, heat is desirable, and the CFL saves very little energy. There's little or no energy saved during the cool seasons when the heat is desired. Now, 75% is saved in the hot areas. So the year-round balance is something that the energy saving by switching is overstated. So like in New Jersey, for instance, in the cold winters, you want the heat. In the cool summers, you don't want the heat. So you save in the summer, but you're going to probably spend more energy to heat the house in the fall and the winter. So you may break even in New Jersey, whereas in Florida, you're going to see a 75% savings year-round. So understand that they make those generalizations, and it also you have to look at where they're making the generalization. If the company is viewing their green status based upon a 75% savings on electric, they don't tell you that you're going to lose 75% of the heat value. So that's something that, you know, again, it goes back. It's sort of like prescription drugs. They tell you all the good things, and then they all of a sudden they have to disclose the bad things. But I've never seen an energy-saving light bulb commercial that says, oh, by the way, if you live in New Jersey in the wintertime, your furnace is going to run 10 minutes more per month to keep the heat in the house. So they don't have to disclose that. So the frame of reference is important. Growing green actually means an understanding of the total impact of the environment, not just one aspect of it. So you got to see the big picture. So the green movement should be seeing the big picture. It's sort of like, when we've heard these stories, they'll have a green summit and all the big shots flew in on their private jets. So let me get this straight. We're going to, you know, they want us to give up our anything that we want or give up our electricity and stuff like that. But then the guys making the decision can fly in on private jets. The trip on that private jet probably has a bigger impact than anything I could do for a year. Does that mean they shouldn't use private jets? Probably not. But it doesn't mean that, you know, it's not as green as people like to think. Be critical. Be critical of energy claims. Use a larger frame of reference. This is green versus greenwash. Consider the impact of everything, including one of the things we didn't talk about is, you know, the manufacturing process. Does the cost to manufacture that CFC light bulb more than an incandescent light bulb? In many cases, it is. So that, and then the use, I mean, if it's used in the summer, yes, it's a savings. And the use in the winter, maybe not a savings. And then also the disposal. Can you throw that light bulb in the garbage? Is it hazardous to the environment? Does it have to be handled separately? Fluorescent bulbs, I still don't know whether they have to be recycled or not right now. But, I mean, I don't believe you can throw the tubes in the regular garbage because most of them used to have a little bit of mercury in them. And we don't want that in our groundwater. So, I mean, does that have to be handled differently? The cost of disposing it, the energy to transport the thing, it all goes into whether a product is green. We're going to hit a couple commercials, and then we'll be back in a little bit. So I got more to talk about there. Thanks.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hundreden Healthcare, your full circle of care.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HundredenChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hundreden County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hundreden is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterton Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
All right, we're back. We're talking about green and greenwash and also perspective. You got to keep an eye. You got to look at the different costs of different things. For instance, I read somewhere, and I don't know how. Don't quote me on some of this stuff, because I mean I know it's just stuff that I've read. But like you're talking about Tesla and about the batteries necessary to run that car. And if you've ever seen the car and the amount of batteries that are in it, and I'm not saying we shouldn't do this, but I mean think about it. If everybody was driving a Tesla and we were changing batteries. Even if it was once a year or once every 3 years, where would all those batteries go? And then also batteries, still to my knowledge, most of them use rare earth metals, which are environmentally destructive to take them out of the ground. I mean, to get some of these metals out of the ground, we literally are on carbon footprint, the machinery necessary to get them out of the ground, to process them, to make the batteries so they have long energy life. And then people think that, my son says to me, well, you just plug it in. Well, somewhere that energy is being generated. Either it's nuclear, it's either wind or water generated, or it's coal or fossil fuel produced with coal or oil. So somewhere along the line, the energy has to be created. So you got to keep that in mind. And then you think about all the landfills with all the dumps and full of batteries. I can bet you that the batteries should be recycled, and I don't know how much of them can be, and the newer technology will come along. And that's the right thing to do, is to keep doing it. So don't take my statements as saying we shouldn't be energy conscious, but it's not quite what you think it is. You got to see the bigger picture. You got to look at the manufacturing process. There was a thing where I remember when my son was young and he was in the hospital for a couple of days, and they used cloth diapers, and he got the most horrendous diaper rash while he was in the hospital from the cloth diapers. And I remember reading something saying that cloth diapers actually have a bigger environmental impact than disposable diapers. Well, disposable diapers, you know, they don't disintegrate in 10 days. It takes years for them to disintegrate. Some of them, the earlier plastics, probably for hundreds of years. But the impact on the environment was in the landfills and everything else. But the cloth diapers, I understood that the chemicals in the wash detergent sheet necessary to clean a diaper properly and to sanitize it probably had a bigger footprint affecting our environment than the disposable diaper. So really, you got to look at the big picture. You know, does it cost more? I mean, the manufacturing it, what resources do we use to ship it? To keep it, to clean it, and to dispose of it. So you got to look at the whole entire life cycle. A branch of the green movement, the LCA, is the life cycle analysis, and it's how is it impacting through its life cycle. You got to consider, like we talked about, the impact on raw materials, manufacturing, the use and disposal, even the transportation. I mean, a car has a certain footprint, but do you realize you've got to measure if the car's made in Japan and shipped to the U.S., there's a whole steamship that's involved, a whole huge ship that's powered by diesel fuel to ship it to the United States. That goes into the footprint. So you got to look at that. So in summary, how green something is really, you must do the following. You must consider all the ways the product or the initiative impacts the environment. That means all the ways, the energy use, the pollution, the toxicity, the disposal, the natural resources necessary, and how they get the natural resources. If we're getting a rare metals earth from Africa and it has to be put on a ship, you know, the metals, those raw materials don't get on the ships without burning diesel fuel. Or burning diesel fuel to ship them across the world. So you have to consider the entire life cycle of a product and everything that goes into it. Not an easy statement to make. I mean, something can be good on itself, but to produce it, it could cost you the environment a lot more than we think. Let's talk about green appliances a little bit. Green appliance, which is Energy Star. Does anybody know what it means? Energy Star is an international program. It produces energy savings. So this is a good thing, but again, it has impact. The products use less energy than the ones before it. The energy saved depends on the product. 20 to 30% on energy savings is average. So you look for the Energy Star rating. Most appliances have them today. The better the big. But like the CFL light bulb example that we gave you before, the energy not used by an appliance ends up as heat. So remember what the old saying that energy can't be created or destroyed. We just change its format or change its state. So the total energy stated by a product is overstated. If you look at it, when heat's desirable in the wintertime and you're running your refrigerator and your washing machine, the heat generated by those appliances are contributing to the heating of your house. Anything that contributes to the house in heat is a reduction in what you're going to burn in fuel and gas or oil or whatever you have for your heat source. So it's not a complete wash. So it's also true about electric appliances. I mean, if your wife's a cook and she's using the blender all the time, that blender's contributing to the heat in the house. In the wintertime, that's a good thing. In the summertime, it's a bad thing. So depending on the climate, again, it's going to affect. So different appliances are going to have different impact on your energy usage, whether you're in a cold climate or a warm climate or what time of year that you use it. A pool filter running outside isn't contributing much because the heat generated by that pump is going into the atmosphere and it's not really affecting anybody. So that's, an example where an energy savings on a pump that uses less energy probably is a straight energy savings. Because you think about it, I mean, if I have a new motor that uses 30% less electricity, the heat that I lost is in the atmosphere anyway, so it's probably better that I'm using less. So there's an example where you might find that it's that. Now, old appliances, should we throw them out and get Energy Star? If money wasn't an option, it should be throw all my old appliances out and get new ones. Well, you got to consider the climate, the primary heating, and the primary cooling. Like we talked about, that applies to the light bulb, it applies to your washer, your dryer, it applies to any appliance in your house, especially your refrigerator. And consider the environmental impact on disposing of that appliance. We have thousands of dumps full of white metal, and white metal is referred to as appliance metal, and a lot of that's recyclable, but a lot of it's not. A lot of the new products have a lot of plastic in them. So that plastic, unless somebody takes it apart, is not recyclable. So hopefully there somebody there is taking it apart. And also consider the energy necessary to produce a new product, ship a new product, get it to the store, and get it to you. They all weigh in on the environmental impact. If you save 4%, you say, oh, that's 4% energy savings, but it takes 35% energy to create the thing. Are you really saving 30? You may be saving 4% in your energy bill, but the environment's not winning. The environment's losing in the picture. So there's more to it than you would normally think about in appliances. And I got a picture here of hundreds of appliances, hot water heaters and everything in the junkyard. To really scrap that metal, it has to be taken apart, and things have to be taken out of it because even circuit boards have solder and lead solder in them. And you might think, oh, it's only one board in the refrigerator, but if there's 200 refrigerators in the dump and everyone has a circuit board that has lead solder, guess what? It contributes to our groundwater, and it eventually makes it our way back. So new appliances versus old appliances, they're energy efficient. They use fewer resources. Their high efficiency clothes washer, for instance. The old refrigerator uses lots of electricity, but the heat goes into the house. So you got to weigh plus and minus. But there's something that interesting about that. Now, how many of you have a garage with a refrigerator in it? I know a lot of people that have a garage and a refrigerator. Now, here's an example where the second refrigerator in the garage is nothing but a waste of energy. It's usually an old one, so you're not buying a brand new one to put in the garage. Also, the refrigerator is not built to run in a cold temperature, so the refrigerator, the compressor, uses a lot of energy to keep that refrigerator cold because it's not getting the heat transfer. In the warm environment, it gets a heat transfer, so it pulls the cold air out of the refrigerator, makes it cold inside, whereas you add the energy back in. In the garage, you're not doing anything because the system is making heat, but it's not helping. So is it really, is it making your garage a little warmer? Probably, but unless you're in the garage working on the car, you probably don't care that the garage is hot or cold. So here's an example where the garage refrigerator is a huge waste of energy, and you got to be careful there. So that's where you could probably make an impact in a green statement. Get rid of the old garage refrigerator, and unless you really need a second one, don't have one. It's nice to have it when you have the party, but do you keep it plugged in all the time? Also check to see that it's clean, because most of the time in the garage, when I do an inspection, I'll find the garage it's loaded with lint, and the bottom is, the coils are covered, so the refrigerator is working even harder. So you're actually increasing your carbon footprint, increasing your green statement, and you're doing nothing but keeping a few cans of beer cold. So consider that. There's some examples where you can actually save some money and that. But not even buying a new refrigerator doesn't have the impact that you think it does if you're going to put it in the garage. So from fixtures to appliances, going green means thinking of seeing the bigger picture. You've got to consider the climate you're in, whether you're predominantly cooling or heating. In New Jersey, you have both. So, you sort of balance it out. So you may not have that. You may be a neutral gain in that energy production. Does the heat go into the house or the outside? That's what we talked about just now. The refrigerator's in the garage. The pool pump is outside. The fan for the house is outside. So the energy balancing may not be as straightforward as you think it is. So balancing the engine versus the disposal versus the resources to manufacture and to ship and to get you the product, you got to weigh it all. I have lots of friends that may be saying, "Oh, I'm environmentally sensitive. I buy this, I do this, I do that." But you know, then you look at what it takes to do that. They're not as big as what you think they are, and that doesn't mean you shouldn't try. It doesn't mean you shouldn't step there. So don't go the, you know, today the trouble is if you say one thing, people think you're evil. I mean, you don't have that difference in opinion. I'm not saying we shouldn't go green. I'm just saying you got to be careful what you do, because sometimes you may be thinking you're all green and you're really not. That's where that green wash comes in. Let's talk about heating and cooling, because you know, your biggest use of energy in the home is the heating and cooling of the home. It's more so than most, even your car usage in most people. Now, some people are on the road all day, maybe not. But heating and cooling your house is the biggest thing we can do. That's why the big thing is when I hear people talk about all these people that want to go green and all these initiatives, and the people that do it, the movie stars, and Al Gore comes to mind, because they say Al Gore has five houses. I don't know whether Al Gore has five houses or not. I don't care whether Al Gore has five houses. But don't harp on me to save energy in my 2,100 square foot house when you have two or three houses that are 4,000 or 5,000 square feet. I mean, I heard Bernie Sanders has three houses. You know, their footprint to keep those houses heated and cooled all year round is a lot bigger than our footprint. So maybe we got to start by example, and everybody's got to do their part, and including people who, you know, how much do you really need 4 or 5 houses? Do you rent them? Do you make money on them? I don't know, but it's just not as vanilla or as cut and dry as people think it is. We're going to learn about we learned about appliances in the last session, but now we're going to look about whether you know the heat or cooling is lost to the exterior, and heat and cooling is the largest energy use. Whether you're using gas, oil, electric, there are a lot of benefits to updating your old heating and cooling systems. They do save energy. They do have a big impact on the environment. And the payoff times, though, are often overestimated. So if your appliance is near the end of a life and it's near the end of its life cycle, yeah, you should upgrade. I tell people this all the time. They ask me, well, how long is the furnace going to last? I can't tell you. I mean, I've seen gas burners that are 30, 40 years old still working. So they're not a defect, but could you benefit from a new one? I can tell you, I've upgraded my oil furnace, and the only reason I upgraded my oil furnace is I needed a new air conditioner. And the new air conditioner wouldn't fit on top of the old burner. And it would take lots of retrofit, and it probably cost me half of what a new furnace would just to get the a new furnace and a new air conditioner instead of having a retrofit air conditioner put on top of my old burner. But I did save about 20% in oil consumption, because I went from an 80% efficient furnace to about a 93% efficient furnace, and I saw the difference in the first year. And, you know, it's hard to measure cost because, you know, the prices of oil are different from year to year, and I don't know about you, but I keep my oil in my gallons, but I can't really average the oil price. What I look at is the total gallons burned. And, you know, in 1 year I burned, it was like 1,200 gallons, and in the new furnace I burned like 900. Now, that in itself can't be used perfectly, because was this year warmer than last year? Was the winter colder last year? Were we home more times in the winter? Were people in the house more? Were we working more so the furnace was down during the day? I can't tell you that. That's a huge, calculation. So be careful. If you're touting a 10% savings, that may be just because it was warmer that winter than it was in the past winter, or you were home more often in the past. So you can see the savings there. But let's talk about a couple of different things. Heating. The efficiency of a furnace. Burning fuel generates heat, and not all the heat stays in the house. And AFUE, I think it's annual fuel utilization efficiency. That means a 70% AFUE means that if you buy $1 worth of oil and you get 70 cents of heat out of it into the house, then 30% of it goes up the chimney. Now, it may not go up the chimney, it may go out the windows, but I think that you know what I'm saying. Basically, for every dollar I spend, I get 70 cents worth of heat, so I'm losing 30% out the window. The conventional furnaces, believe it or not, are 55 to 65%. They no longer manufacture these, but there are many of them out there. I do many boilers and heaters that are in the 55 to 65% range. The mid-efficiency run around 80 to 83%. Those typically are replacements for those older conventional ones because they use the same chimney functions and they use the same exhaust systems. The high efficiencies now, you'll see more and more of them. You'll see them in all the new construction. They're 90% AFU. That means you're going to get, and many of them can go up to 95%. That means you're getting 95 cents on a dollar back in heat. You'll see that they're vented a little differently. They're vented directly out of the house, usually with PVC pipes. And there's usually two of them. One of them to bring fresh air in and one of them to exhaust the exhaust out. And the exhaust is much hotter because it's actually burning it a couple times and it produces moisture. So that's a side effect of it versus the old ones, which didn't produce moisture. But then you have to watch the moisture because sometimes it backs up, sometimes it leaks back into the burner, and you got to make sure you're keeping it away from that because you can get corrosion in the burner. So why would anybody use a new furnace? It's about time to make the switch. Why would you use the conventional one? Well, is it time to replace it? Well, the high efficiency is better for the environment. The even high is 10 to 15% more efficient than the middle. So you can do it. So switch from a conventional. If you have an old furnace, you have an old hot water boiler or hot water forced air, fuel, gas, or oil, and you go from an old conventional one to a high efficiency, you're looking at a 40% increase in efficiency. You could see that payback for that furnace in less than a year, depending on how big the house is and how many furnaces you got. Now, I say that, how many furnaces now? I never thought of it before, but when I became a house inspector, more and more I'm seeing houses today with 2, 3, 4 furnaces. I can't imagine that because I have one furnace and I got an oil bill, and I can't imagine swallowing it 4 times. But there's and there's pros and cons to this, too, because the high-efficiency furnaces cost more to install. They may not last as long as the mid or the older ones because of the technology involved. There's a lot of circuit boards in them. They're closed burners. You can't really see them. You have to have a technician that really knows what they're doing. It's a little bit more difficult to get into it. When I inspect them, it's very hard to see the burners. Usually they're a sealed unit, as I said. So from a money point of view, there's very little difference between the mid and the high. But if you want to have a less carbon footprint and you want to be more efficient, I would go with the higher one. But you can see the new burners, you only have to look inside to see how more complicated they are. In the old burners, you had an igniter board, and you had the igniter, and then you had the burners. These one looks more like a computer inside than it does a burn chamber. So you got to look at that. The benefits of a high-efficiency fuel bill, the more dramatic savings can be switching over time. For example, if you have a larger home and the fuel bill is usually a lot higher, you can save more with a high-efficiency furnace. It can be enclosed. The new furnace can be put in a small area. You'll see them. They can be put in closets. They don't need the huge amount of air because they're bringing the air in from the outside. So you're not having that big louvered door or that big noise. It's usually quieter. It drives the combustion air from outside, so it's not drawing heated air from inside affecting the house. It's sort of like the new gas fireplaces. If they're sealed and they're drawing air from outside and then the exhaust goes out the separate pipe, you're not drawing air from inside the house that's conditioned, already heated air, so you're not using that expensive air. The air outside is cold, but you haven't paid to heat it. the air inside your house is heated, so it's a more expensive air if you think about it that way, and it goes that way. So, and then cooling. Let's talk about cooling, because cooling is a big area, because I don't know about you, but my electric bill soars in the summertime, and I don't have a pool. It's usually the air conditioner, because my air conditioner goes on in probably April to May, and it doesn't go off till now. And even then, it might go on a few more times. Replacing the air conditioner have a big impact on the environment. Less energy and same amount of cooling, so why not switch? There is reasons why not, because sometimes it affects. As I said to you, I had an older style burner and air conditioner, and to get the new air conditioner, it was bigger and the coils were bigger, so they would have to modify the connection to the furnace and the air handler. So there are some things that, you know, could I afford to put a new burner in when the burner was only 20 years old? Probably I paid a little bit more for that, but I'm probably better off now. And then the SEER rating. Now, is everybody confused about the SEER rating? I know I am. It's the seasonal energy efficiency ratio. The higher the number, the better. That's what you got to remember. The higher the number, the better. Very old air conditioning systems may have a SEER rating of 8. A modern air conditioning system will have a minimum of SEER of 13. To get an ENERGY STAR rating, it must be a 14.5. Now, you'll see this come into play when you apply for some of those energy rebates that were out there. Now, I applied for one, and I didn't get one because I think my air conditioner was 13.5, and it needed to be 14.5 for it to qualify for the rebate from the energy from the state of New Jersey it was. So it's funny how that works, right? I mean, you don't know that till you buy it, and then you find out you're not eligible for it. And I tell you what, nobody's selling me the furnace or the air conditioner kind of warned me that was the case. So let the buyer beware. It's up to you to know that. Let's talk about an air conditioner SEER is a 20% savings over an 8 SEER. But a 15 SEER is a 47% savings over a 10 SEER. So you can see it graduates up very quickly. A 19.5 SEER is 60% higher than an 8 SEER. So very good savings on an air conditioner. And the new refrigerants. Let's talk about that, because a lot of people still have old air conditioners out there. If they ran on Freon, which is a CFC refrigerant, it's very bad for the environment. We don't use it anymore. And actually, officially, they stopped producing Freon this year. I believe it was January 1st this year. There's no more production of Freon as we know it. That doesn't mean you can't get it, but it also means that it's very expensive to get it. I've heard charges of $1,000 to recharge a system with Freon. Some systems can be flushed and use a new refrigerant. More than not, if you have a system with Freon and it needs service, that's the time to probably consider removing it and getting a new system. HCFC refrigerant, R22 basically, it's much better than the CFC, but still has negative impacts on the environment. It's used in most air conditioning systems today as a CFC, so you still have to maintain it. It's still a hazardous chemical in a sense to the environment. But it's funny, I don't know if you were kids, I remember we did a lot of things that were stupid when we were kids, but like Freon, I remember having a can of Freon from for an auto body shop that you put in your car, and we'd pop it open and spray it on the ground and watch it disappear. We thought it just disappeared, but little do we know that it's going into the environment and poking holes in our ozone, and someday it may give us cancer. But it's little things that you learn over the time, right? But so the type of refrigerant you have in your unit is important to know. And, if you have service on it, that's the time to make those decisions. Non-CFC doesn't harm the environment, and ACs are moving to that more and more today. So you're going to see more and more go there in the coming years. I don't know if there's any other systems out there right now with it, but so those are different refrigerant. That's key to your energy savings too. Now everybody says heat pump. Oh, heat pump's the way to go. Yes and no. There's two types of heat pumps, and then we'll talk about air source and ground source. Air source heat pump moves heat from the outside air to the inside house. And a ground source are called geothermal heat pump, and that's something I wanted to put in my house, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But it moves heat from the ground outside inside the house and vice versa. Heat pumps are very good, and they're probably more efficient in the warmer climates. The trouble in the Northeast, when temperatures get around 32 to 0 degrees, heat pumps have a very hard time keeping up and keeping the house comfortable. And we'll also talk about how heat pumps work and how they may keep it the same temperature, but a house with a heat pump, the house feels cooler than a house with a furnace. And I'll tell you why in a minute. We'll get to that. So let's talk about the heat source heat pump first. Let me make sure I sure. I got to run a couple commercials here, and then I'll come back, and we're going to finish up with the heat pump here, and then we'll do that. So hang on. I'm always running out of time, so bear with me, all right? Thanks.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
All right, I'm back. We've got a few minutes I want to wrap up because this is an important concept because a lot of people don't understand it. But a heat pump moves the heat from outside to the heat inside if you're heating, and it does the opposite. And it's actually a reversing valve in your outside compressor. In the moderate temperatures, a heat pump saves a lot of energy. In New Jersey, it's less effective and less efficient. At about 32 degrees, a heat pump uses more energy in the electric resistance than electric resistance heat. So if it's 20 degrees out and it's snowing, you're actually using more energy than you would be with an electric heater or even a heat source. But the heat pump is only viable when it doesn't get very cold. So understanding the air source, they're getting better. And because what it does is it compresses the refrigerant and to extract any heat out of the outside air. And believe it or not, even at 32 degrees, the systems can pull air from the outside. The problem with a heat source heat pump is you'll get to 72 degrees and it'll keep it there, but it keeps the air at 72 degrees. So the house feels cooler than it does in, a forced hot air system, because a forced hot air system heats your house by pushing out like 110 degree heat into the house, and the thermostat shuts it off when the house hits 72. So if you're walking around a house that's 70 degrees and you turn the heat up to 72, you're going to feel 110 degree air blowing on you from the vents, and it will eventually settle down, and then it will shut off when the thermostat gets to 70. So you'll find hot and cool spots in the house as you walk around, and if you're sitting near a vent, you'll feel very warm and cozy. Versus a heat pump takes time to get it to that temperature, because once it gets to 72, it maintains 72, and it doesn't like pump in 110 degree air to get you to 72. So that's why you'll feel a little different in the heat, and people have complained that a heat pump feels colder than a house at 72. Yet the raw temperature, both are at 72. So in moderate temperatures, you get a threefold boost. You spend $100 on electricity and you get $3 worth of heat. So the coefficient performance of 1.6 to 3 is typical in moderate climates. In HSPF, which is heating seasonal performance factor, that depends on the outside temperature and it's different. So understand if you're looking at doing a heat pump, you might be three quarters of the year, but then you might still need a heat backup. And most heat pumps have an electric heat source in the furnace or a fuel source, a gas furnace or something like that, backing it up, because when those extreme winters get there and you have a long time and even the condenser could freeze outside, it's very difficult to get that heat in the house and get that comfort level. Geothermal is the way of the future, but it's very expensive today. I looked into putting my house, it would be about $30,000 to put one in, and they would have to drill like four holes 200 feet down, and then there's no guarantee they won't hit rock. And if they hit rock, the cost of the drilling goes up. So you're talking about $30,000 plus what they do there. And they can also do it with trenches. If you're building a new house, and you could lay it in the ground, because down about 4 feet, the ground is like 55 degrees and it maintains that 55 degrees all year round. It's the reason why your footings have to go down below the frost line, because the ground is very stable and the temperature is very much 55 degrees all year round. So they can actually, the heat pump works very efficiently to pull heat out and also to dispose of the heat in the summertime. So it works very well. But it's a very elaborate system in the sense that it goes down in the ground and it circulates the refrigerant. It's sort of like antifreeze that goes down through it, and then it comes back up. We did look at it that briefly for the high school, actually, when we did the addition, but the amount of holes that would have to be dug and the amount of the equipment, surely you didn't have the capital money to do that. If money was no object, it'd make sense to do this. And then you'd have the savings over the lifetime of the house. But for me to spend $30,000 in a house right now for a furnace, for a geothermal system, the payback is 30 years. Well, I'll be dead and gone before I see the payback. So understand that sometimes, it's not the right thing. I saw some interesting in Texas as they were doing planned communities, and they were doing community geothermal, whereas they had these huge wells on the property where they ran the geothermal into, and then they distributed that cooling fluid to all the houses. So every house was connected in the big loop, and it seemed like a great idea because you all contributed to it. It was a big system maintained by the homeowners association, and you all got cooling for almost free because you're getting the energy from the ground, which you're not paying for. The only thing you're paying for is the electricity to move the coolant and to compress it and extract the heat to push the heat to it or pull the heat from it, depending on what season you're in. So in Texas, it made sense because in the wintertime, it generated more than enough heat for the houses down there that were in moderate temperatures. And then in the summer times, it had tremendous benefit for the cooling. So geothermal is the way of the future, but I think it has a little ways to go before you can do that. Some of the other savings, and we won't go into it too long because I got to go. We're going to wrap up now. But, instant hot water heaters are big savings because you're only heating the water you need. And in some cases, if it's hooked to the boiler, in the wintertime, you're getting free hot water for the house because you're heating the water to heat the house anyway. In the summertime, you're paying for instant hot water. The big thing with instant hot water heaters, people, make sure you look at the gallons per minute. In my house, I have a shower that has 7 heads. And one instant hot water heater would not be enough hot water to feed all 7 heads. Now, you might say that's a waste, but if you only take a 5-minute shower because you're getting blasted like a car wash, instead of taking a 20-minute shower, maybe I'm saving there. But it's one of the luxuries in life that I live with is having a big shower with a lot of valves, and it's electronic. It's a cooler system, and we'll talk about that someday, about plumbing thing features in the bathrooms. So with that, we're going to wrap up today. But again, my name is Larry McEntee. This is Home Team with Jeannie and Larry. Jeannie's a Weikert realtor. She comes to you next week and every other week, and maybe on the fifth Wednesday we'll do a joint show together. Jeannie's a great lady. If you're looking to buy and sell a house in the Flemington area or anywhere around, give Jeannie a call over at Weikert. She's certainly a fun lady to work with, and I enjoy her company. So tune in there, and tune in next week for her. She'll be presenting something in the room, and she always has some interesting guests. And I'm from Home Team Inspection Service. If you're looking for a home inspection or you're looking to sell and you want an inspection to prepare for that selling, give us a call at 973-547-7748. Hey, if you got any ideas of what shows you would like to hear on this show, I'm bringing in guests. I'm trying to bring in different ones every time. Sometimes it's a little harder than others, but send me an email at lmcentee. It's lmcentee at hometeam.com, and I'll be sure to answer any of your questions. You can also check me out at www.hometeam-northwestnewjersey.com. That's hometeam-northwestnewjersey.com. Sorry about that. I butchered that, didn't I? But, you know, join us next 2 weeks, and we'll talk some more about Home Team. So this is Larry McAtee from Home Team talking to you on the Hunterdon County radio station. Hey, guys, have a great weekend and enjoy the weekend. Enjoy this weather today because it's 91. Tomorrow, get the sweaters. It'll be cold. So talk to you then. Bye-bye.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heide and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Breaking news out of Connecticut, where a World War II era bomber has crashed in a fireball as it tried to land at New England's second busiest airport. Fire and rescue operations continue at this hour. A spokesman for Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont confirming the crash of the B-17 at Bradley International Airport north of Hartford. Airport officials say the plane was associated with the Collings Foundation, an educational group that was bringing its Wings of Freedom vintage aircraft display to Bradley this week. Other breaking news involving Democratic Senator and presidential candidate Bernie Sanders hospitalized after heart surgery. Campaign officials say the 78-year-old Sanders experienced chest discomfort while in Las Vegas. Doctors found a blockage in an artery and inserted a couple of stents. And this is USA Radio News.
I'm at the American Veterinary Medical Association annual convention in Washington, D.C. with Dr. Barbara Natterson Horowitz, evolutionary biologist and physician.
There's a form of fainting that happens when people get stressed because the excitement triggers a slowing of the heart. Why this happened didn't make sense. The heart shouldn't slow down. The heart should speed up when there's fear. But what I've learned by working with veterinarians and learning about how animal hearts work is that young animals, when they are scared, sometimes their heart rates get very, very low, and that causes them to be very still. And when wild animals become very still, it often makes them safer from predators. One possible hypothesis is that slowing of the heart rate in response to fear in our species is actually an evolutionary echo from our vertebrate ancestors for whom the slowing of the heart was life-saving.
There's more valuable information at avma.org.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo today acknowledging for the first time that he was in on President Trump's controversial telephone call with the President of Ukraine in July. The call that's now at the center of the House impeachment inquiry into Trump.
I was on the phone call. The phone call was in the context of now, I guess I've been the Secretary of State for coming on a year and a half. I know precisely what the American policy is with respect to Ukraine.
Pompeo speaking during a news conference in Rome beside the Italian foreign minister.
Stocks have plummeted on Wall Street because of some poor job numbers and an ADP private payrolls report and weak manufacturing numbers contributing to major declines. Just before the hour, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down over 500 points. That ADP private payrolls report says the economy added around 135,000 jobs last month. This is USA Radio News.
America's built and based on liberties and freedoms. Liberty HealthShare brings that to healthcare. The liberty of choosing your own doctor. The liberty of choosing your own hospital. Liberty HealthShare makes healthcare affordable to millions of Americans. Ignite your liberty. Sharing plans starting at $199 for a single, $399 for a couple, and no matter how big the family, only $529. That's $529 for the entire family. To learn how you can save, go to lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com.
Today is the 22nd International Walk and Bike to School Day. Cities across the nation and in dozens of other countries will be encouraging kids to use their bicycles or foot power instead of buses and carpool.